And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Do you want to hear the good news or the bad news first? Okay, first the bad news. The war on wonder keeps raging. Remember our national forests? Good. Because with recent changes in forest protection legislation, forests as we know them may be a thing of the past. You'll know a lot more about these changes during our first segment. And the good news? It's coming up in just a moment as the new energy wars to win the battle for self-sufficiency gain new recruits from around the world when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Some things don't change, and that certainly applies to the old good news, bad news shtick. But here's a new twist, and one that actually keeps this whole game going. It goes like this. Here's the news. The Bush administration rewrote the regulations which protected roadless areas in our national forests from further road expansions, and which now opens up all national forests to roads, unless states specifically apply for protections. Good news, bad news. Well, of course that depends on which side you're on. If you're involved in logging, energy development, or mining, it's good news. And if you're a wolverine or a grizzly bear, bad news. As it is to most Americans who actually want the wildest places protected. And here's another one. Oil prices headed back up to nearly $53 per barrel after a short dip this past week. Good news? Bad news? Well, here's where it gets tricky. If you're an oil company executive or a Saudi oil baron, it's terrific news. And if you're a sustainable energy advocate, it's good news too. Because these high oil prices are making it clear that we have to develop a whole new system of energy production. And that's why this is another special edition of the Wild Side News as we continue to explore the emergence of the decade of discovery, finding answers to our most vexing problems. Today, you'll hear about the new penetration of our virgin forests from spokesmen from two leading environmental organizations, the Wilderness Society, and Defenders of Wildlife. We cover this issue following the news. And then, in segments 2 and 3 of today's show, we go in-depth with Rob Wilder, who works in some interesting ways, forging advances in the new energy wars. His Wilder Hill Index brought green tech investing to the heart of America's investment mainstream. You're about to learn the real facts in investing in a sustainable future. And Rob Wilder walks his talk. He takes us on a tour of his home in Southern California, a 2,400-foot home empowered by the sun. Is it really possible? How does his family cope with this new energy lifestyle? You just might be amazed what you hear. That's all coming up as we continue today's Voice of the Earth here on the Wild Side News. But first, the news. Let's get the bad news over with. The Bush administration last Thursday effectively removed federal protections for the nation's national forests by reversing the roadless rule that prohibited road construction on 58.5 million acres of prime forest lands. The roadless rule, signed by President Clinton during the last week of his administration, prevented road construction on areas currently road-free, thus preventing logging, mining, and energy development, which cannot operate without roads. By removing this restriction, America's national forests are a free zone of potential development. The new regulation, arrived at with no public input, requires states to specifically request protections on national forest lands within their boundaries. Governors will have 18 months to petition for such. And even then, the federal government will have the final say on whether or not to grant such restrictions. This story will be covered in depth following the news. General Electric Chair and CEO Jeffrey Immelt pledged his company's future to development of clean technologies during the launch of their initiative called EcoImagination. The effort will include a $90 million advertising campaign with splashy ads in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and Washington Post. Immelt stated clearly his company's motive when he stated, "It's no longer a zero-sum game. Things that are good for the environment are also good for business, not because it is trendy or moral, but because it will accelerate economic growth." Immelt is committing GE to double its R&D investments into eco-friendly technologies from $700 million in 2004 to $1.5 billion in 2010. That is more than 10 times the 2005 federal R&D budget for solar and wind combined, and equal to the entire venture capital investment in cleantech. Immelt did wax a bit more prosaic as the launch party continued, quoting from GE's legendary founder, Thomas Edison, who said, "I never perfected an invention that I did not think about in terms of the service it might give to others. I find out what the world needs, then I proceed to invent." I invite us all to sing the GE lingo. GE, we bring good things to life. Hooray for GE. And in a similar vein, U.S. and British institutional investors are hopping onto the hybrid hydrogen clean tech highway as they met this week at the United Nations and pledged to invest $1 billion in clean energy in an effort to reduce risks posed by climate change. And with assets totaling over $3 trillion, they may have actually been thinking that such investments will add more green to their nest eggs. We advance the decade of discovery, the clean tech investments, the eco-imagination, as we take a close-up look at the future of eco-investing in our second and third segments. And that's the news. And a few reminders. You can add your voice to the voice of the Earth. To find out how, visit the archives for April 7th. You do have a voice, and we want to hear it. So join in. So let's continue now and take a look at a breaking news story that as yet has not really made its way to the mainstream media. Last Thursday, amidst the wild frenzy of crisis in Social Security, the threats of using the nuclear option, the increasing violence on the streets of Iraq, the cold-footed bride, the child molestation trial of Michael Jackson, and George Bush's rush to Russia, just another day in the life of our little nation, the White House announced that it had changed the National Forest Protection Regulations. Huh? What? Yeah, the states will now be required to, well, to better understand what just happened, we now turn our attention to Washington, D.C., and to Michael Francis with the Wilderness Society. And now joining me from Washington, D.C. is Michael Francis. Michael Francis, you're with the Wilderness Society, and tell me what your specialization is.
I'm the director of the National Forest Program at the Wilderness Society, so I work on the national forest issues for the society. I'm their chief advocate and program officer.
There have been some changes recently that affect all the things you're concerned about. First of all, talk about what the protections were in regards to the national forest, and then let's discuss what changes have been made recently.
Well, the roadless rule of 2001 provided that in the future the Forest Service would cease road building on those last remaining areas in the national forest that were still in a roadless category. They would have prohibited commercial timber sales in those areas and set them aside primarily for recreation. It would have allowed trail building. It would have allowed them to fight fires in the area. It would allow them to do forest restoration type work in the areas, but they would have to do it without the use of roads. And usually the work that would be done to restore the environment would have been stuff that could have been done without roads and would allow future generations to have an additional 60 million acres of wild forest that people now have today.
Well, of course, there's been quite a struggle going on to maintain that regulation, but recently something has changed.
The Bush administration, from the time it came in office, immediately tried to undo the roadless policy of the prior administration, responding to industry's trumped-up charges that they were being somehow shut out of the forest. Well, already over 50% of the national forest system is open for development, for logging, and for other industry, extractive industries. The administration came in, decided they were going to suspend the rule. They went through a lot of process, and a lot of the public commented on it, and they kind of got cold feet at that time, and so they kind of went through a series, a long different series of rulemakings and proposals and things like that. And it wasn't until after the election last November that all of a sudden they came out and decided, okay, now's the time to do what we want to do to please our special interests who have been asking us to try to undo this process. And they went forward with a proposed rule that said essentially that there are no protections for roadless areas unless the governors of the state want to ask us and we agree with what they ask.
Part of the nature of this change is the fact that there had been such a public support of maintaining the roadless areas. There were, 600 hearings and 2.5 million public comments in favor of maintaining these, and then this change actually happened without any public hearings.
That is right. I mean, the roadless rule, when it was developed, as you stated, had 600 public hearings, 2.5 million comments received. That's the largest number of comments ever received on a federal action. The history books. And since that time, since the January 2001, an additional 2 million comments have been received over the last 4 years at different points in the and when the administration has tried to make changes. The public has continued to speak out in force that they like the idea that we need to protect the last wild areas on the national forest system.
So despite the fact that there was such an enormous public support for maintaining these rules and regulations to prohibit new roads from being put into national forests, the administration went ahead anyway and just changed that.
They did. They just, despite the American people in the comment period, and then when you do polling and ask the American people about it, despite the fact that they desired that the administration should maintain these protections, they immediately after the last election went over to the dark side and said, gave industry exactly what they wanted.
Let's discuss what this change is really going to mean, because it's a radical transformation. Changing control of our national forests and switching the control much more to governors and state legislatures. Give us a concept of how that works.
This is part of, I think, of it, what we feel is an overall desire by the Republican majority in the Congress and the Bush administration to turn over control of federal public lands to states and localities and citizens in the areas. The federal public lands, in the national forest system were established in the late 1890s and into the 1900s with President Roosevelt. Really making the additions and putting together what we now know today as the National Forest System. And those lands have been administered on behalf of 280-some-odd million Americans, and the 200 million Americans, or I don't know what the tax base is in this country, the exact numbers, but every American, part of their tax money goes to support this National Forest System, and therefore they have a right and some, I would say, responsibility to participate in the management decisions on these forests, because they are being managed for them and for future generations. And what this administration is saying that, well, we can believe the American people can pay for this, but only a select few governors and those special interests in states that have a lot of national forest lands should have a greater say and how the public's lands are managed.
So therefore, in effect, there really are no longer protections against roads from the federal level, and this has been switched to the states.
Yes. Decisions on roads will now be made by states and under this particular program on these last 58.5 million acres of areas that don't have roads. And those decisions will be made by interest in those states who want to develop those interests. If we look at the history of the Forest Service, in the last decade, they have, I'll use the state of Idaho as just one example, that 1 million acres of roadless area in between 1988 and 1998 were roaded, and roads were built in there at taxpayers' expense to service the logging industry. And what we have is this continuing subsidization by the American taxpayer of extraction of logs from the national forest lands in the way they build the roads and the way they put sales out for bid. So what we have is the industry loves the subsidy, and they do use their political clout at the local level and the planning level to continue to try to open up these areas to get logs at below market prices.
Let's say that a state decides that there's a national forest that they think probably should be forested. has it been determined yet who would then pay for those roads to be constructed? Because that's part of the issue, that the National Forest Service already is overburdened with trying to maintain the existing roads, that if we start adding new roads, this is going to add to their financial burden.
Well, under the way the system is set up now, the roads are paid for by the federal taxpayer. So if a governor party makes a decision that we recommend to the secretary that these roadless areas be developed, and then we encourage you to, you know, plan your timber sales and stuff like that, the taxpayers of the United States, of New York City, of Southern California, of Iowa or places like that, will end up paying for these roads to be built, and also pay for the mitigation of the environmental damage that the roads do.
So it really isn't shifting the burden away from the federal government to the states in terms of maintenance. Still, the federal government and the Forest Service will have to pay for this.
Yes, it's just what it is allowing the special interest through using governors, which are more responsible local interests. This is just an economic pumpkin for them to pick. I'm hopeful that people in the states who supported the roadless area protection states will be very vocal to their governors during a process in which they try to make recommendations to the federal government to do it. And I hope that kind of voice comes through again and again, as it has in the past. We have a chance of seeing these roadless areas, still a chance of getting them protected. I hope citizens get involved in forest decisions at the local level. If a forest decides it wants to put a road in the roadless area, that they are there during the environmental documentation process, putting forth reasons why it shouldn't be roaded and logged, and that they participate in the process to be able to do it. I think that there will be, in some areas, in some national forests, there will be a big push to start roading these areas, because they feel threatened that if they don't get the roads in them, then someday in the future, some other president that is more enlightened will come back and say, you know, let's protect what's left and let's stop this, you know, nonsense and waste of taxpayers' money. So I hope that, you know, the citizens out there will get involved in that. And I know from a point of the conservation community and people such as the group such as the Wilderness Society, we will be diligently watching the Forest Service, and as it tries to make inroads into these roadless areas, if we have the resources to be able to get involved in the process, we will get involved in the process with the idea of protecting these areas, that they should not be developed because they have a much higher value for the recreation and for other things than logging or mining.
Hold on, I'm going to try this one more time here, try to keep this system alive.
Okay.
Now, if the federal government decided that they, let's say that a state decided they did not want to, I'm trying to get a sense of what's involved in this new change in the regulation. If, let's say, that a state decides that they really aren't interested in developing a forest, having logging in one of their national forests in their state, and they say, no, we really don't want this, can the federal government actually trump that decision?
Yes, it can. The catch-22 here is a state could go say, okay, we agree with what happened before. We want all the roadless areas in this state protected, and our citizens want that. They then send this petition off to the Secretary of Agriculture, who can at that point accept it or reject it. And then 6 months later, the Secretary comes back and says, well, I reject that. We're going to go back to the forest plans. This, to me, is nothing more than a procedural smokescreen in which to hide, so the administration can hide behind the fact that it wants to open up these public lands and wants to aggressively own it, but setting up kind of a smokescreen so it can kind of hide behind governors and advisory committee and these amorphous things that say, well, really it's not us, it's the other person who's doing this. We're kind of neutral in this, and that's just not true. They have a policy in the National Forest of leave no tree behind. At the end of this century, we could be looking at all but 18% of the national forest with roads all over it, drilling pads, clear cuts, etc.
Michael Francis of the Wilderness Society, thanks for adding your voice to the Wild Side News.
Thank you very much for asking.
For more information on the Wilderness Society, visit their website at www.wilderness.org. These changes have wider consequence than just the effects to the human population. Quite frankly, those hardest hit may be the wild creatures. To investigate these effects, we next hear from Defenders of Wildlife.
And now I'm talking with Mike Leahy, who is a staff attorney talking with us from D.C., and he works with the Defenders of Wildlife. They're very concerned about the changes to the regulations protecting the roadless areas of our national forests. Mike, tell us what your specific interest and concern is.
One of the reasons national forest roadless areas are so important is for their wildlife values. A lot of species depend on roadless areas as places to get away from people and the hunting pressures that people place on wildlife and fishing pressures, recreation pressures, disturbances from motorized vehicles or even hikers. And those sort of disturbances are minimized in roadless areas because they're a lot harder for people to access. A lot of these species depend on these areas as kind of a refugia, and particularly a lot of endangered species and a lot of our most popular and most visible and charismatic endangered species, grizzly, bears, wolves, lynx, woodland caribou, and many other species, wolverine, elk, even pine marten and fisher. There's a lot of animals that are heavily dependent on roadless areas, and so we view the protection of the remaining roadless areas as absolutely critical for the survival and recovery of a lot of these species.
What types of changes would you expect to the habitats and therefore to the animals and their survival?
There's a lot of species that are known as interior forest species, including many birds, which are a good example of this. And as roads penetrate into areas, they bring a lot of things. They're often associated and accompanied with logging, as well as with people. And species known as edge species can follow roads in and clear cuts into areas that were previously habitat to interior species. So with birds, for example, you have a number of birds, many birds, that rely on a dense forest, and that's a protection from predators and competitors like crows, blue jays, squirrels, species that are much more common throughout the United States because we've converted so much of the landscape to an open landscape. And so those areas, those sort of species move in to interior forest areas, and they can outcompete or kill or otherwise impact the species that originally lived there when it was a more dense and remote forest.
This isn't just about roads. It really is about roads for other purposes. In other words, it's not just putting some nice little roads so that we can more easily get in and have access to have fun. Really, this is about opening up the national forests with roads to extractive industries such as forestry, mining, and energy development. That's really what we're talking about, isn't it?
That's right. The Forest Service isn't building many roads for the purposes of recreation. They build roads for logging, for mining, sometimes for other extractive industries, and then they usually leave those roads in place. They don't remove them. And then they become used by motorized recreation folks and many other people, hunters, poachers. Road is one of the most significant impacts, but it is certainly usually accompanied by other significant impacts, clear cuts, logging, and a lot of problems are created by this. A lot of times logging is done in order to, under the name of preventing fire, but roadless areas are one of the least fire-prone areas, and by punching roads in and thinning out the forest often dries out more and can become more likely to ignite, particularly when you have people driving in along these roads. Sparks can come off of cars, campfires can get out of control, cigarettes can be thrown out of windows. So actually entering roadless areas with roads and logging is more likely to create fires than just leaving them alone.
This is a very complex change because it appears as if there's going to have to be some sort of legal challenge both on a state and a federal level because now the states are involved.
We are trying to continue to push for protection of all the remaining roadless areas on national forests in the United States. We are working with Congress in that regard and hoping that at some point Congress will reinstate the roadless protections that the Bush administration just removed. Various environmental groups are working with in the states to try to encourage their governors to speak out for protection of all roadless areas within the state. The changes that the Bush administration has put in place are regulatory, but Congress could intervene and override those regulations with a law mandating that roadless areas nationwide should be protected. And we think that's justified because we look at roadless areas as a nationwide resource. They represent roughly slightly under a third of the national forests in the country, but if you look at it across the entire country, there's only a tiny fraction of the nation's land that hasn't been crisscrossed by roads. The country is 2.5 billion acres, more or less, and we're talking about 58.5 million acres of roadless forest. And so we think in that context that these areas take on an increased importance. And so we think there is a national interest. And the reason the national roadless rule was needed in the first place is because the local forest planning process was not protecting these areas. And so we think Congress is totally justified in stepping in and requiring these areas to be protected. And they could do that by passing a law that would then override any regulatory changes.
For people who wish to follow this process that the Defenders of Wildlife is so aggressively working in, how can they do that?
People that want to follow the roadless rule and the changes being made to roadless air protections and roadless areas themselves can work with any number of environmental groups. Defenders of Wildlife maintains information on this issue, as does the Wilderness Society. They've played a very important role in organizing opposition to these changes to the roadless rule. The Heritage Forest Campaign is an umbrella group that is very active in generating public support for roadless areas. And many local environmental groups are active in supporting the national rule, but also in particularly protecting their local roadless areas as well.
Well, Mike Leahy, Defenders of Wildlife, I want to thank you for adding your thoughts and your voice to the Wildside News. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
It's a long, hard road ahead, it appears, being cut and paved into America's wildest remains. Time will tell if we, as the people of America, have any power whatsoever or any voice remaining to effectively protect what is ours, and not only ours, but here on the Wild Side News, I'm taking the stand for the wonder. It is a war on wonder and the wild places and the wild creatures upon which the American spirit has thrived. Perhaps the correlation between the destruction of our nation's natural legacy and the destruction of our national integrity are more closely tied than any spinmeister can untangle with their webs of words. Speak up, speak out, take action, and beware. The road less traveled is the one that will make all the difference. When we return, we jump the fence into the realms of the possible and the positive, as environmental truths translate into technologies that are fueling energy independence, so that we may someday live at peace with this miracle we call Earth, when we return with your voice of the Earth, here on the Wild Side News.